Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen. It was an early version today. We had the Eternal Bum Podcast with Ralph Williams out of Pittsburgh, and now we're going into the regular schedule time of the Doc Talk Podcast, hosted by a brother, a mentor, and a friend, Dr. Greg Roscoe, out there in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Yours truly, Mark Mancini in Los Angeles, producing it. 347-205-9631. It goes by quick, an hour. Catch the archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports Podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, more of him, less of me, as I lay the red carpet down, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic, the threes, Peter, and everybody out there listening to it out of Cleveland and stuff. Doc, how are you? How can people get a hold of you? And I'm going to man the boards to the 55-minute mark, my friend.
Well, thank you very much for the introduction, Mark. You know, things are going super. The weather in Pittsburgh's phenomenal. The Pirates aren't doing too badly. People need to get a hold of me, as they always have. GJRMD308@outlook.com. Today we have a very special session, and we want to talk about, you know, finances. And I kind of had the idea in my head about spring cleaning and then looking at our finances, our investments, from a spring cleaning standpoint, you know, kind of decluttering things or going on and maybe making some new changes with the birth of spring. You know, last week we talked about income taxes with our accountant, Darren Schindler, and I had an awful lot of good replies about that, and a lot of people understanding more about tax deductions, health care deductions, et cetera. Today, I have a gentleman by the name of Vito Cedro. He's in here in Pittsburgh. Vito is a wealth advisor, and he's going to tell us what that means. Vito also has all kind of initials after his name, MBA, AIF, CRPS, CHFC. And what that tells us, he has a tremendous amount of financial education. And, you know, we want to talk a little bit about financial planning, wealth management. Maybe we'll get into retirement planning. You know, what about long-term care planning? What are some of the pearls that would like to give our young people listeners that overall they don't get in trouble with their finances and they can build wealth over the years? So that's kind of what I'd like to lay down today. You know, this is a health show. We've talked about many diseases, how to take care of ourselves, about nutrition. And, you know, again, financial information and our financial health is very important to our physical health. So that overall, I'm bringing these people in and these topics in to give our listeners kind of a wide spectrum of information that we have and the people that I know that we can bring in and help our listeners grow, stay successful, and also improve their health. Having said all that, I have Mr. Vito Cedro here. And Vito, how are you? And thank you for being on the show.
Good morning, Dr. Roscoe. I'm doing very well, and thank you very much for hosting me on your show this morning.
It's great. It's good to have you. You know, thank you for spending Saturday morning with us.
And I know I'm very happy to do it.
What's that?
I said I'm very happy to do it.
Wonderful. I may ask you to do it again if you like it, okay?
Would be happy to.
Beautiful. You know, and, you know, Vito, with regard to one's finances and investing and growing wealth, you know, this concept, how do you handle your clients? You know, what do people come to you for? You know, what do they say when they call? You know, and then again, once you get them, what do you talk about? You know, how does one find, you know, a financial planner? When do they know they need a financial planner? Help us with this, please, sir. Go ahead. Carry the ball.
Happy to do it. So to kind of start at a very base level, so let me take a step back. I've been in the financial services industry since 1997 in various capacities. I've been directly advising individual clients ranging from, young professionals in their 20s up to people that are into the retirement phase of their life and wanting to discuss wealth transfer. And there's a lot that goes in between there. So I think I'd like to start by kind of just laying some very basic financial concepts out there for your listeners.
Go ahead, please.
And foremost, I would say having a budget. No matter where you are in your life, in your financial life, children, not having children, married, single, having a budget and really understanding your own personal situation is a crucial first step.
Wow.
I have, a budget. We need to know what we have as far as income coming in. What are our resources coming in? What are our obligations? Do we have a mortgage? Do we have car payments? And then looking at that to say, is there a gap or is there a disparity between our resources that are coming in, whether that's earned income, investment income, Social Security, a pension, and our obligations, our monthly living expenses, the debt service, those types of things. So that is the first step for anybody that I speak to. Most of my clients that I deal with, I range from the young professionals, again, that are maybe just starting their careers and don't know what to do with this thing called a 401k that their employer is offering them. They've heard about things like Roth IRAs, and they just don't know where it is.
Right.
Now, as we sit in 2023, there are limitless resources online to bring people up to speed. But when we're talking about potentially investing thousands of your hard-earned dollars, many people get a little bit intimidated, and that's where they look to me.
Sure.
For my younger clients, some very typical topics we talk about are how should their 401k contributions be invested within the plan? How much should they be contributing to their retirement plan? How does making those contributions impact their budget, meaning their take-home pay?
Can I interrupt for one second, Vito?
Sure.
You know what?
Yes, sir.
I'm not sure our listeners may know what a 401k is. What if we start there and say, hey, this is something, your employer may offer, et cetera, please?
Correct. So in the world we live in today, the traditional pensions that our parents and grandparents had are very rare to find. So 401ks were started in the 70s as a way for people to defer or put away part of their paycheck into a tax-favored plan, favorable type of an account to save for their retirement. So companies have shifted the responsibility of the retirement income away from themselves to us as the employees.
Okay.
So a typical 401k plan, you as an employee, you make an election that says, okay, I want to defer or contribute $100 a pay or a percentage of your pay. Typically, I'll use 6% as the example. And that money is taken out of your paycheck before you get taxed and put into an investment account that is sponsored by your employer. Typically, the plan will also offer what are called matching contributions. So the employer says, if you contribute some amount to the plan out of your pay, then we will also make a contribution on your behalf. The most common formula that is used is 50 cents on the dollar up to 6% of your pay. So what does that mean? If I, as an employee, contribute 6% of my paycheck into this retirement account, my employer will contribute 50 cents on the dollar, or another 3% into that plan.
Wow, that's wonderful.
It's very common, and it's a great savings vehicle for employees. So again, I want to drive home the point that the contributions that you make to a 401k are going to come out pre-tax. So if your gross paycheck is $1,000 and you say I want to put $100 out of the pay into the 401k plan, the $100 comes off first, and then you are taxed on $900. So you're getting an immediate tax benefit.
Wonderful.
As you go through your working life, the money in the account grows tax deferred, which means that you are not paying taxes on dividends, interest, or capital gains on a year-by-year basis.
Peter, that would
it all gets
you're not paying federal tax, state tax, or local tax on any
correct.
Of those earnings, correct?
Correct. Yes, sir. Yes,
and
sir.
I have another, you're talking, this is great. If your employer gives you 3%, is that a taxable event?
It is not a taxable event. It is actually, from the employer standpoint, they get a tax deduction for that, but it's just another contribution into the plan. So,
wow, what a win.
For any of your listeners that are with an employer that offers a 401k, it is very important to know what are the provisions of that plan in regards to the employer contribution to the plan. So to my earlier example, if the company is offering a 3% match, it is very important that you as the employee at least contribute enough out of your own paycheck to take full advantage of the matching contribution that your employer is offering. It's
wow.
As a financial professional, we look at it as part of your compensation. If you choose not to contribute to the plan, then you are essentially saying to your employer, go ahead and keep that extra 3% that you were going to pay me.
All right. Vito, how do we tell a 25-year-old, put money away? Let's do that. Forgo that $100 this pay. How do you
sure.
talk to them about that?
They look at retirement,
I try
to illustrate
40 years away.
Sure. If you think about it from a long-term growth perspective, the earlier that we or anybody starts saving for their retirement, obviously the more
yeah.
you are going to have down the road. And there's been, examples of, somebody who starts saving at 25 and saves for 10 years versus somebody who waits 10 years and then starts contributing.
Sure.
The person who started earlier under a reasonable set of assumptions will always end up having more at the end of the road, and the end of the road being when you go to retire. It can be very
sure.
difficult for a 25-year-old that is facing having to pay rent for the first time, having student loan debt outstanding,
yeah.
wanting to live a full life, to sacrifice and make those contributions. So the easiest way for somebody to kind of get over that hurdle is to, right out of the gates, when you're hired and they offer you the 401k, find out what that matches. If it's 6%, then automatically start with the 6% to take full advantage of the employer match.
Sure.
And then you work your budget, you work your personal budget based upon what you are bringing home or what's being deposited into your account after that contribution is made. It's the concept of pay yourself first.
Yes. And Vito, who sits down with younger people that you're right, finished college, finished med school, and they're starting a life? What if they really don't know about a budget? What if they don't think about, well, I'm working now, and retirement's so far away. How much money will I have?
Sure.
If I have 6%, and we're talking 35, 40 years down the road, what does the number look like that they may have? How do you
entice them,
is what I'm after.
How do we entice? So some resources that people can reach out to, if your employer does have a plan, oftentimes they have a plan consultant. And that's something that I do in my business, is I help
sure.
Companies who are sponsoring a retirement plan. I help them at the plan level, and then I also set aside time to meet with individual participants. I or any financial professional will have plenty of material to illustrate how much you could
sure.
potentially have down the road if you start now versus waiting.
Wonderful.
To make those contributions. So it's, having the budgets, starting to save early are the best things that somebody in their 20s, just starting out in their career, can do for themselves. It may be painful now, but you will be very happy that you did these things
beautiful.
When you get
so
33 years down the line.
Vito, these are the pearls that we want to let our listeners know, our young people know. These are pearls of wisdom that'll pay off big in their future.
Understood. some other things I would suggest, and these are not necessarily related to investments, but managing debt. I remember being in college.
What does that mean?
And so many people in that age range, you know, they have no choice but to have to take out student loans. And we have to, you have to deal with that. Taking a look at where your loans are from an institution standpoint, what are the interest rates you're paying? Are there ways that you can maybe refinance those loans, take advantage of federal programs to get that interest rate down, which then reduces, you know, your cost of that debt? Beyond that, credit cards. I want to make this very clear. Do everything you can in your power to avoid using credit cards, especially this year with interest rates being raised. There are credit cards out there that are charging 22, 24, 26% interest. It is very difficult for a young person if they get themselves into a position where they have $5, $10, $15, $20,000 worth of credit card debt to get themselves out of that. It can take decades to get out of there.
Vito, if I can, along that point, which is very important, and I appreciate you bringing that up. You know, if we're saying the interest rate on credit card debt is 25%, what does that mean to our participants, you know, that are doing that, affecting their monthly payment, correct? If they don't pay the credit card in full, then the balance would be assessed at that 25% or so. Is that correct?
Yes. That is correct. So if we use an example of if you have $1,000 of credit card debt and it's at 25% interest, if you only make the minimum payments, if you go the whole year with $1,000 outstanding, you're paying another $250 of interest. And the way credit cards bill you is that it's a percentage of your outstanding balance. So you may get a bill on a credit card that has a $5,000 balance and the payment – and I'm just using a simple numbers out of the air, you know, if it's a $200 payment that's required, only $20 of that $200 payment may be going to the actual principal. And everything else is the interest cost. So you get your next bill and you see, well, I started at $5,000, but how come my balance is only, you know, is only dropped by $20, $30, $40, whatever that number is, depending upon the interest rate. And that's how younger people get into those problems. And so not to beat the horse to death, but anybody out there, and I would give this advice to anybody, try to minimize your use of credit cards. You know, use it as a method to make easy payments, to make reservations. But if you don't have the money to pay for that charge within 30 days, then you need to look at other ways to, you know, pay for that, or maybe it's the purchase, you know, that should be delayed. Credit card debt is very bad.
Yes, and so that as far as if they are working and they do get a paycheck, you know what, as far as, say, that paycheck cycle, do you recommend they get paid on a weekly basis or every 2 weeks? You know, what's a better way for them to manage their money if they have an option?
Well, unfortunately, most people don't have an option as to how the frequency that they're being paid. I work with companies that pay their employees on a weekly basis, and there are very good reasons why they may want to or need to do it that way. And I have worked with people that their employers pay them once a month. Correct.
Right.
For people that are paid once a month, budgeting becomes even more crucial. You know, because you got to make that deposit, you know, go, you know, the whole month, you know, with no other income coming in. I would say the most common frequencies that I see are either, biweekly, you know, every other week, or twice a month, which can be very manageable.
Yes. And again, still, you need to be in a budgeting mode to make your car payment, your mortgage payment, you know, your utility bills. Because you know they're all coming. So, indeed, it has to have young people, you know, getting some financial sense about what it takes to live independently, correct? And, of course,
absolutely.
With the people with gray hair like I have, you've been through this for a while, and you kind of understand that, you know, you've got to pay the bills first, and then what you have left over, you go ahead and try to live on. because you've got to pay your bills.
Exactly. So,
yes,
and, you know, again, you know, the budgeting and starting early with saving, especially through an employer provided plan, are the two most important steps to somebody starting out in life.
And
in their financial life.
Yes, no, I agree. And, you know, as far as working with this, so this is one side of the coin for the future, so that overall at retirement, there are resources available. And then, you know, as far as, say, the other side of this, Vito, and I think we're going to go to L.A. here momentarily, you know, wealth management, building wealth, you know, talking about risk tolerance, investing. You handle that side of the coin too, correct?
Yes, I do as well. That is where I probably spend the bulk of my time. So when I engage a new client, I follow a very well-known process from, you know, that is put out from the American College of Financial Planning, and I'll just quickly walk you through that process. So the first step is,
sure, please.
When somebody contacts me, we establish some, you know, parameters. So Mr. Client or Mr. Prospective Client, you know, what is the pain that you are feeling? What are you worried about? What
are
you concerned about? What are you looking for from me? At the same time, we have a dialogue and I say, okay, I can provide this for you. Here's the process that I, you know, follow, and
yeah,
just come to an understanding of what we are looking to do. The next step is gathering, you know, data from my clients. And some of this is done via, you know, questionnaires.
Yep.
You know, I need to know what you own, what you owe, what you earn, and what your goals going forward are. So that's when we get into a discussion.
What if they don't know? What if they don't know what their goals are? You know, they can't say specifically, I want to have X amount of dollars in my retirement. I want to go ahead and have X amount of my savings. How do you help them go ahead and give you their goals? Go ahead, please.
And that's where it's the art of financial planning versus the science. You know, I have certain questions that I will ask somebody. Most people don't, that I come across, aren't able to say, I want to have X amount of dollars at this age, or I want to have this amount of income. So I ask those open-ended questions to say, you know, what do you want your retirement to look like? Do you plan on traveling? Are you more of a homebody?
Sure.
What kind of expenses do you want to have? What kind of house do you want to live in? And the conversation just kind of, you know, develops and blossoms from there too. So not only am I getting an idea of what this prospective client is looking to accomplish financially, but they also are becoming, you know, more versed and are realizing what it might take to live a certain type of lifestyle once they get, you know, to retirement and, you know, are able to stop working.
And, sure. You know, again, we talk about the side here in medicine about the four pillars, you know, of medical care. And just real quickly, the pillars number one are to get the history from the patient, you know, to get the information. And then we do, as a professional, examination of the patient. And then we do diagnostic testing, which is the third one. And then the fourth one, decision making. And it sounds to me that you go through a very similar process as the four pillars, where you're communicating with the patient.
It is very similar, Dr.
Roscoe. Right? I'm serious.
Very, very similar.
And again, yes. And that art, I think you used the word art, which is like the art of medicine also. So we do very similar things, Vito. I wanted to let you know that.
I appreciate that. And
yes,
so
go
after
ahead.
We get through the data gathering, the next step is I, as the financial professional, do my analysis, my evaluation of the situation, taking into account the client's goals. Sometimes I have to take liberties and assume certain things. You know, you're telling me you spend $5,000 a month now. We have to assume that that is only going to go up at some inflation, you know, rate of inflation, unless the client tells me otherwise. After the analysis, I then, you know, present recommendations, whether it is related to budgeting, whether it's related to managing a portfolio. Do we need to save more? Do we need to spend less? Whatever that might be. Then we get, you know, it may involve, you know, certain product specific type of recommendations.
Yeah.
And I like to give multiple, you know, at least two recommendations to accomplish the same goal. And that kind of transitions to the discussion about risk tolerance.
Yes.
If if a client is telling me, okay, I want to, you know, over the next 10 years, I want to save $200,000 to buy whatever, a condo, a boat, whatever it might be. Depending upon how that particular person feels about investments and risk and you know, topics like volatility of the stock market, you know, a traditional type of investment account may or may not be appropriate. We may then want to look at something that is going to give a fixed rate of interest, provide more certainty to the plan, but it may cost more in order to have that certainty. And that's where we get into a discussion about, okay, here's the trade-off. You can invest in stocks, and you know, you may only need to invest $1,000 a month, but there's less certainty that you will get to the end of the, you know, get to your goal versus using something, a type of an account that's paying a guaranteed rate, like a CD, a fixed annuity, whatever it might be. But you may have to invest $1,500 a month. And then beyond that, we get into just implementing our, you know, the recommendations and finally monitoring the plan and monitoring those recommendations. So I would equate that to, you know, my doctor tells me I need to come in at least once a year for my annual physical. Many of my clients, you know, we review their plan at least once a year. Many, it's on a quarterly basis. And that goes back to the establishing the relationship and setting expectations. Some clients want to see me, you know, every 3 months. Other people may want to only see me once a year for a formal meeting, but have phone calls in between. So when you're engaging, when you're if you're thinking of engaging a financial professional, that is the process that you should be looking for from that person. As far as resources for your clients to find people, if they are employed and the employer has the 401k plan or other type of retirement plan, often they can lean to that the consultant that is involved in that. Asking for referrals from your parents. Who do your who do mom and dad use? Who do your aunt and uncle use? Who do your friends use? For this type of advice. Sometimes I mean, your insurance agents may be able to do that.
Because it is very, very personal, very something probably very customizable, and everybody has a little bit of their own goals, their own takes on dealing with money, correct? And how they see it and how they want to go ahead and have it managed. I'm going to put you on hold for a minute. We're going to L.A., and he has – The phones have been ringing off the hook. So go ahead, Mark Mancini in L.A., help us here with these calls.
I'm telling you, being at the assignment desk and taking some of these comments, I'll pass a few of them on to you so you guys can elaborate on it. Joey from Bucks County, Pennsylvania, regular guy on this show, and we love the regulars coming through, basically says investments. What are the best investments without, you know, losing a lot of money? Is it oil? Is it technology? I'm a guy that if I go to Atlantic City and I hit something, I want to get out because I know if I hit it and I drop it right back in, I'm going to lose it. So share us a little insight on what are some great investments where we're not losing a lot of money, where we can make a little money. Ooh, that's a good question.
That's probably very hard, Vito, but go ahead, please.
No, that's a great question, and I get that question quite often. You know, unfortunately, it's difficult for me to give a single answer to that. Just like, you know, all of our fingerprints are unique to us as individuals, our risk tolerances are different as individuals. The best answer I can give to that is, you know, work with a financial professional to determine what your personal risk tolerance is, what your goal is, you know, with that block of money and investment, and let that person give you recommendations based upon your personal situation. I can tell you that typically for younger people that are saving for retirement, if you have a basic understanding of the markets and how investments can fluctuate in value, tending towards a more aggressive investment style, something that is heavier into stocks versus things like bonds and CDs, is going to be a more prudent investment, because over long periods of time, history has shown that the stock market tends to outperform other types of investments. It's a matter of how much of the up and down on a day-to-day, month-to-month, quarter-to-quarter basis you can withstand. You know, some people just don't have the proverbial stomach to handle the ups and downs of the stock market on a day-to-day, month-to-month basis. Some other guidance I could, you know, give your
sure.
callers is that if you look at your various buckets of money, as we call it, so your money that
yeah.
is set aside for retirement, in general, should be or could be invested more aggressive, you know, riskier, those stock type of investments. If you are putting away, say, $20,000, knowing that you're going to use it in a year or two as a down payment on a house or to buy a car or make home repairs, then you would want to invest that money more conservatively so that you are not forced into a position where you have to sell an investment when it might be down, but you need that money immediately.
Okay. So, that, again, that's very individualistic and something you need to go ahead and – go ahead and customize the program to for that client, correct?
Correct. Another way, you know, for that, for your that particular caller, if you're considering a certain type of investment or an industry or sector, you know, go online and look at the history of that investment. If it's a particular stock or a particular mutual fund, you know, look at the long-term history. See what that investment did in 2008. See what it did in 2020. And then conversely, see what that investment, how it performed and returned during the bull market years when the markets were up.
And
so,
you know,
unfortunately,
the other thing
I'm not able to give specific
sure.
investments advice in this forum.
And, you know, Vito, with regard to what we're telling our listeners, they need to be responsible. You know, they need to put a little bit of work and time in to research what they want to do with things. And
absolutely.
As I
read a statistic. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying.
I remember from years ago reading a study that said the average American, and don't quote me on these exact numbers, the average American spends something like 15 hours a year planning their family vacation, but they only spend 30 minutes a year planning their finances.
Which is probably true.
Pretty amazing.
Right? Yeah. Well,
pretty
you
amazing.
Know, I mean, I think we've talked about it on our program that I'd like our listeners to be responsible for their health, to take a look at things, to research things. If they have questions, you know, to call us. That's what really started the show, that we wanted a place for our listeners to call with their health-related questions. And indeed, we need, again, I use the word responsible. We like our listeners to be responsible for their health care. You just can't put it on the lap of a nurse practitioner or a PA or even a doctor to handle all the nuances and all the little subtleties of care. I think we need to be a little more involved in our health care, but also what you're speaking of is our financial health care as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I get quite often I get emails or calls from clients or people that I know in my personal life saying, hey, I read this article about this particular topic or this particular
yes.
type of investment, whatever it may be, you know, give me some feedback. And I spend a good bit of time doing those kind of things,
sure.
you know, helping to educate my clients. I think
absolutely.
That is a very crucial step, you know, an informed client or an informed patient tends to always be a better client or patient, and I'm able to help them
they are.
Better because they are able to articulate what they're feeling. You know, for me, what they're feeling is, you know, more mental. For you, it's, you know, physically what they're feeling.
Well, physically.
And
you know,
help them get to those, the right solutions.
Yeah. Well, you know, it as far as a provider of health care, financial health care, you have to look at yourself as a teacher. You know, when
correct.
People come in
yes.
and talk to me, you know, they'll hear these words. They'll see these medicines. They don't know what some of these words mean. My goal is, in a sense, is to break that down. Let's talk about what that parathyroid gland is that they're talking about or, you know, the medication you're currently on. Let's talk about it so that overall you have an understanding. And, again, very similar process if we're doing therapy. in saying, okay, this is what you need. What I like to spend time with my patients doing is this is what the problem is. This is the therapy we've chosen. This is what we expect the therapy to solve, and this is the final product. And we've been very successful in getting good results and keeping patients healthy, rather than saying, here's a pill, take it, come back in 6 months. And I think you
I couldn't agree more, Dr. Roscoe. As I, you know, as I begin working with people and I help educate them and, you know, try and talk at, you know, an appropriate level for them and avoid using my industry jargon, and they become more familiar, the working relationship is more productive.
Improves.
The results tend to be better for the client because they understand what they have, what they own, what they're investing in, and at the very least can provide them a level of comfort that the things they're doing now are going to pay off in the end and provide them with that secure retirement. And I keep using retirement because that tends to be the most common end goal that my clients are looking for. They want to make sure they have enough money to live the life they want to live, not run out of money before they die, and in most cases want to leave some sort of an inheritance to their heirs or a charity, whatever it might be.
And those are, from your standpoint, I would think, that's a pretty heavy product that you have to produce for this client. I mean, the right investments, the right planning, the right budget and spending of their money. So you have a lot of responsibility. Almost like
there is
a
good bit. Fortunately, you know, I have the right tools that are able to do that. I spend a lot of time in my forward-looking financial planning system showing clients, okay, if you're doing these five things today and you keep working and, you know, maintain a certain level of income, this is what the future can look like. Now, granted, you know, trying to project out 20, 30, 40 years, there can be a lot of variability. But if we agree on, you know, reasonable assumptions as far as what your money is going to earn over the next, you know, X number of years, what is your income going to look like over the next, you know, number of years, we can get, you know, a pretty good idea. And again, that continual monitoring, that coming in for your annual checkup helps keep, you know, you as the client informed and knowing, okay, the things that I'm doing are working. You know, this is where we said we were going to be in 5 years, 10 years, and, you know, we are on track to hit those numbers.
Excellent. No, I mean, I really look at what you're doing very similar to medical management of healthcare, whether it be blood pressure, diabetes, you know, with doing the right things, interacting with the right things, and then monitoring the program. If there's a change, then you make a change, but very similar to managing our money. And, you know, we have tons of more questions. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, out of our regular out of Florida, Sarasota Gale out there basically says, and then I'll get another question, give it back to you after this one, says when you basically invest, is it better to go to the smaller investment companies? Because through the grapevine, she's heard the Schwabs and Hancocks, they don't tend to necessarily look out for you as much as a smaller investment company. Any thought to that? Great questions.
That is a great question. Unfortunately, you know, the larger the firm, to get the same level of personal attention and care, if you're at a larger firm, you got to have a larger account balance. It's as simple as that. If you're looking to, you know, to really be involved with a financial advisor, financial planner, and you want, you know, personal attention, but you don't have several million dollars, then looking to an independent financial advisor may be the right way to go. I regularly get people coming to me that have worked with larger firms and they were tired of, you know, not having a dedicated advisor or being directed to a call center or having to do a lot of things on their own versus somebody at a smaller firm that is going to have the time and capacity to have a more, you know, personal and intimate, you know, working relationship with you.
And, Vita, if I can bring up something maybe uncomfortable with regard to how do you get paid? You know, with regard to, say, functioning with these, if you don't mind answering that, or if you'd rather not, But how do you
I'm happy to answer it.
Yeah, in this process, if you don't mind.
Gotcha. So there's a few ways that I can be compensated or have been compensated in the past. The most infrequent way that I am compensated is on a flat fee basis. So somebody comes to me and says, I want you to do retirement planning projections for me, analyze my portfolio and give me some recommendations, and then that's going to be the end of it. So I'll say, okay, well, I will do this scope of work for $2,500 or $5,000, whatever it might be. Or we might build in, some sort of a, once a year consultation for some amount of money. The most common way I am compensated is by charging a percentage of the assets that I manage. So if I engage a new prospective client and they've got a 401k from a former employer that they want, somebody like me to take over and professionally manage, then I will charge a percentage of that account balance on an annual basis. It's the theory that as you, the client, make more money, I, the advisor, make more money. The percentage remains constant, but I collect a fee on an annual basis to manage that account. The third way, and this applies to mainly insurance products, it can apply to certain investment products, is I am paid a commission from the company that is offering that investment or that insurance policy. So another side to my business, and it's a very important part of the financial planning process, it's not necessarily the most exciting, is the idea of protection or insurance. So if I determine that you, Mr. Client, you've got a mortgage, you've got three young children, you've got college expenses down the road, if you want your family to maintain their standard of living, if you were to pass away, you need to buy $1 million of, term life insurance. The insurance company pays me a commission. It doesn't come out of, the client's pocket.
Got it. Okay.
Okay.
So that you.
So and
you that
that's not
that.
An uncomfortable discussion. I go over that.
No, thank you.
That whole arrangement with anybody I work with.
No, thank you very much for doing that. And I thought that was important for our listeners to kind of understand. Going after help is available, but this is how the helpers, if you will, are compensated and giving you help. So I thought it was a fair question, but again, you handled
Absolutely.
It very, very well. Go ahead, Mark Mancini.
Yeah, let me get one more, and I'll get you back to the interview with about 17 minutes left in this great show. We can go hours with this. Albert from Poway coming in and basically says, guys, they keep talking about digital money. If digital money comes into the equation, who knows if we'll see it in our lifetime, would that ever affect the stocks? Would that ever affect in interest and stuff like that? That is one heck of a question.
What about digital money?
Digital money. I can tell your listeners, I personally do not play in that arena. I do not invest any of my own money. I do not have any of my clients invested in digital currencies. And I wouldn't.
So they would,
I can venture to say that I, as a professional, I would not recommend most people playing in that arena unless they really understand the risks. All you need to do is look and see what some of those digital currencies have done over the last 2 years, and I think you'll understand where I'm coming from.
Thank you for that, Mark. Let me pick it up, and Vito, with regard, Mark, do you have another question? Go ahead.
I got one more if you want, and it's
go ahead.
John coming in from New Rochelle, New York. He said, "Yeah." To replay on your question, I've lost a lot of money in cryptocurrencies. It's well over $90,000. I don't plan any to get back into that. Thank you very much, Vito.
Wow. So Vito was
you're
right.
Welcome.
Wow.
No,
that's a
right.
lot of money
will,
to lose.
The final point I would make on that is I do think that digital currency at some point in the future is going to be part of our lives. I personally just feel that it is very early in the game, that we are at version 1.1, whereas I would feel more comfortable being at version, 5.5.
Right, and over time, no doubt that will happen.
Correct. Correct. But
beautiful.
As we sit here right now, that is not a a financial or an area of the investment world that I play in.
Sure. High risk anyway. And, you know, I have a ton of emails here also that I have for you, Vito. And you know what? My one listener is asking, are the terms and the limits for IRA contributions different in 2023? Are there changes?
Yes. There have been changes. Thankfully, the Department of Labor and the IRS and in their wisdom gives us periodic increases. So for traditional IRAs and Roth IRAs, the contribution limit for people under the age of 50 has increased from $6,000 a year to $6,500 a year for 2023. If you are over age 50, they also allow you an additional, what's called a catch-up contribution. You can contribute an additional $1,000. So if you're over age 50 and you're contributing to a Roth IRA or a traditional self-directed IRA, you could contribute a total of $7,500. For 401ks, they have a much higher contribution limit. As an employee contributing to a 401k or other type of employer-sponsored plan, if you're under age 50, the limit has gone up to $22,500.
Oh,
and if you are over age 50, the catch-up contribution limit is an additional $7,500.
Okay. So that does sound like
a pretty, for most people, that's a very healthy contribution.
Yes.
Now, you may not be getting matching contributions on that whole amount. That depends upon the terms of your particular plan. But from your pay, if you're under age 50, you can defer or move up to $22,500 from your paycheck into the 401k.
Which, you know, puts an awful lot more money in your retirement portfolio, but then again, reduces your taxable income.
Correct. And to kind of take it a step further, over the last, I'd say, 5 to 10 years, more and more 401k plans are offering their participants the ability to make contributions into a Roth bucket of money. So as an employee, you have the ability, if your plan allows it, you can either make pre-tax contributions to the 401k. So that's what I spoke about earlier in the show,
where
you get an immediate tax deduction, versus a Roth contribution where the money that would be directed into the Roth source of the plan is taken out after you are taxed. And there's different tax treatment of Roth IRAs that may make it advantageous to do that. I am a big proponent of not only diversifying your investments, but diversifying your investments from a tax standpoint. So having some money going into the traditional 401k where you're getting the immediate tax benefits, having some go into the Roth portion of the 401k or funding a Roth IRA separately outside of the plan so that that has a different tax treatment. And let me take a quick minute for your listeners. When I talk about a traditional 401k or a traditional IRA, again, contributions are tax advantageous in the year that you make the contribution. So you're getting that tax deduction for that contribution this year. The money grows tax deferred, meaning you're not paying tax on the interest or capital gains on a year-by-year basis. But then at the end of the road, when you get to retirement and you need to start withdrawing money from those accounts to fund your lifestyle, every dollar that comes out of a traditional IRA or traditional 401k is going to be taxed as ordinary income.
Okay.
Switch over to the Roth IRA.
Yes.
With a Roth IRA, you don't get a tax deduction.
Can I interrupt for 1 second on that?
Sure.
If I can, before we get into the Roth,
yes,
if one is starting to withdraw from their 401k, their IRA, their income at that point, their income tax rate based on their other investments still may be as high as it was when they were working. Isn't that correct?
That is correct. And it goes back to every person's situation is different. You know, there's many people that when they stop working and hit retirement, they may be in a lower tax bracket. And then that's when
sure.
having the traditional IRA works out better. You're getting the tax deduction when your income is higher, and you're making those withdrawals when your overall income and your tax situation is lower.
Go ahead.
But there are many people that because of if they've saved well, depending upon other investments they have, if they have passive income, many people I'm seeing now, they hit age 65, 67, whatever it might be, and they retire
yes.
from the job or the career that they've had for the prior 30 years, but they may continue to do consulting work 10 hours a week or 20 hours a week, or decide to go work at a golf course or at the Home Depot. So they may have, you know, income still coming in. And that's part of what I do in my retirement planning process is, you know, look at what their tax situation is going to look like down the road, and I can tailor my
sure.
recommendations based upon that.
Beautiful.
But
and
then for the Roth, I
want
to make sure your listeners understand Roth IRA. So with a Roth IRA,
go ahead.
You don't get the tax benefit in the year that you make the contribution or put money into the Roth IRA, but you get the same tax deferral, so no taxes on a year-by-year basis while you're working or you're making contributions. But at the end of the road, when you hit retirement and you go to take withdrawals out of that Roth IRA, all of that gain comes out tax-free. So a simple example, you put $5,000 into a Roth IRA today, and down the road, it's worth $50,000. So you've got $45,000 of gain. All of that money comes out with no federal or state income tax.
Wow, that sounds like a beautiful vehicle.
It is a beautiful vehicle. It's been a great, option for people to use to supplement and diversify their tax liabilities. The contribution limits are the same as a traditional IRA. There are certain for higher income folks, there are limits. So if you're married and you're filing your taxes jointly with your spouse, starting at $218,000 of adjusted gross income, they start phasing out your ability to make those contributions. You hit $228,000 and you are not, allowed to make a contribution to a Roth IRA. So that's where hopefully if your employer has a 401k plan, if they're not offering a Roth option within the 401k plan, talk to HR, talk to your boss, find out if they can maybe add that in there, because that's a way for those higher income earners to be able to make contributions into a Roth if they're not able
Wonderful.
To do it independently outside of the plan.
Wonderful. We're going to start wrapping things up, Vito. Just another question. If one is getting another email that I have here, if one is in their retirement, they're at the 65 years old, 67 years old, they're going ahead withdrawing from their 401k, their IRAs, they still have a sizable income. Are they able to still make contributions into a plan, even if they're withdrawing from the plan?
Yes. If you're still working and collecting a paycheck, you still have the ability, whether you're 60, whether you're 70, even if you're 80 years old, and you're still employed and getting that paycheck, and the employer offers a 401k
yes.
plan, you absolutely can make those contributions.
Wonderful. All right, Mark Mancini, what do you have?
Well, here we go with Robin out there in Ohio, another regular listener of the show. She goes, well, if you're married and you're making substantial amount of money, how much is it worth to invest not knowing and being a newbie to this? Man, these listeners keep coming up with some good questions, I'll tell you.
Go ahead. Do you want to clarify that, Mark, just a little bit for Vito, please?
So in other words, I married, she's basically saying, and if you have a little money to play with, how much is enough
okay.
to put in there without losing your wallet as far as, putting a substantial – how much do you put into an investment where you're not losing, because she's hearing about these cryptocurrencies and stuff like that?
Well, I think, again, it comes down to, knowing what your personal or individual tolerance for those fluctuations in investment values is. If the listener is saying, okay, well, I've got $10,000, should I you know, should I put it into a CD? Should I put it into, you know, an S&P 500 index fund? Again, that's a very personal decision. You know, one person may want to, you know, invest that more aggressively if it's a longer term horizon, if it's, you know, if there's no particular goal in mind for that money. But if it's $10,000 you're looking to save for another 2 years and then you're going to use it for to fund a vacation or to buy a car, then you would, you know, want to be a little more conservative with that. But again, it always comes back to the individual person and how they feel about, you know, risk and the volatility of these investments.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Go ahead,
let me throw one more, if I can, Doc, and then we'll summarize this in the last 4 minutes. Steve from Corvallis, Oregon, another guy that comes on here a lot, he goes, guys, what about the penny stocks? Is that a good investment?
Well, penny stocks are by their nature, they're just riskier, more volatility, you know, a higher probability that
sure.
company could go out of business. Again, penny stocks are an area that I don't use in my personal life, and I don't use with clients.
Okay.
All right. So, well, you know, as
okay.
far as wrapping
to summarize
up,
it, Doc.
Go ahead. Yes.
I'll leave it to you guys in the last couple minutes to put a cap on this, and boy, we got to get Vito back.
Yeah, we had a tremendous number of calls. Thank you, listeners, for the calls, for listening. And, you know, in summarizing, you know, we've called this show Spring Cleaning, you know, our investments here, decluttering things. And I think Vito Cedro did a beautiful job with regard to talking about a lot of different basics. And I would love to have him back. You know, there's other topics I think he has expertise on, as long-term care planning, college savings plans, a little bit about retirement planning strategies. So we'd love to have him back, and we have a good start on it at this point. You know, I think the key points, especially for our younger listeners, is budget. So important, you know, budgeting. So, you know, you don't spend more than you make. You know how much you have. And then you put some of this away for the future. Would you agree with that, Vito? Is that kind of the philosophy that you've used to be
Absolutely.
So successful for your clients?
To stick with your theme of the you know, spring financial cleaning,
yes.
Definitely with the budgeting. Know what you have, know what you owe. Save
Beautiful.
And save early. Save what you can. Pay yourself first. Get into that 401k plan. Find out what the match is. Avoid unnecessary debt. Stay away from those credit cards. You know, look at what, you know, where your mortgage, you know, may be, car loans,
sure.
You know, manage the debt correctly and try to come up with some sort of a plan for what your future looks like, whether it's the next, you know, 60 days, the next year, the next 5 years, longer term goals, to have, you know, a handle on where you're looking to go from a financial standpoint.
Boy, Vito, thank you. Excellent. Mr. Mancini, you want to wrap it up?
Yeah, I'll wrap it up with this one. And I thought we were going to get it done with the things, but Jan from Woonsocket, Rhode Island, listening, and she basically says, guys, if you live within your means and invest, you never have stress.
She's not wrong.
Yeah.
She's definitely not wrong. Definitely not.
Yeah. Hey, Vito, let everybody know how they can get a hold of you. I mean, because this is such a great topic, and I wish we had more time on it, but time permitting, we got to get you definitely back. So in the Pittsburgh greater area, how would people get a hold of you?
So my office telephone number is 412-385-1008. I would say the
okay.
best way to contact me, and we could, if listeners have specific questions or would like to set up a time to speak with me, my email address is Vito, V-I-T-O, dot Cedro, C-E-D-R-O, at LPL.com. And Dr.
Okay.
Roscoe, thank you so much for this opportunity. I hope your listeners found it informative, and yes, we do have many more topics that we could dive deeper into in the future.
Oh,
thank you.
Doc, how can you be reached, man, with that great staff in Pittsburgh, too? And, boy, I tell you, you helped me even 2,500 miles away with stuff that I need sometimes. So I'm so blessed to call you a brother.
Thank you for the kind words. It's GJRMB308@outlook.com. And if I can talk about next week, you know, we have a gastrointestinal expert on talking about gallbladder and liver disease. When do you need your gallbladder out? So we're going to talk about that next week. And then the following week, we're talking about weight loss. We have a weight loss expert, a bariatric surgeon, talking about weight loss therapy. So we have that also. So we have some good speakers for our next two shows. So thank you, Vito Cedro. Thank you, Mark Mancini.
Well, on that note, happy Jackie Robinson Day to you and Tax Day as we close this show out. Catch the archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. For Vito Cedro and Dr. Greg Roscoe out there in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, yours truly signing off, Mark Mancini in Los Angeles. Have a great weekend, guys, and thanks for tuning in.
Thank you.
Thank you.